Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks to the conveners for putting together this session, and thank you all for being here. I just wanted to take a moment and acknowledge my co-author on this, Brandon Lester. He's really the wizard working behind the scenes to try to make our little contribution to what I'm going to call the Arduino sensor revolution. So there are a lot of challenges to environmental sensing, one of which is just temporal frequency in our measurements, right? So this is an example of molybdenum measurements in a stream. And if you went every week and measured the molybdenum, you'd see these dots here every 7 days, right? Not much is happening if you just go out and take some grab samples once a week. It looks like the molybdenum concentration is not changing, right? Versus, I believe these are the 15-minute or hourly data. If you're looking at that, you start seeing all these patterns start emerging. And so in the last few years, there's been really a push, an emphasis on these high temporal frequency water quality sensors, putting them out in streams, and start looking at relationships between concentrations of various water quality constituents and the stream flow, so CQ kind of relationships, and start learning about sources of different contaminants, time scales, things like that. Related to that also is constraints on our spatial sampling. So for an example, you could put out a CO2 sensor, maybe a couple of CO2 sensors, measure something about the water content at a point, and make an estimate of CO2 efflux from the soil. But if you only do that in one place, maybe there's a plant root there that's causing an artificially high value, maybe you get textural contrast or you get really wet soils, and so that single point may not be indicative of what's going on. Versus if you start getting distributed profiles and start having multiple sensors around, then you can start learning more about what are the patterns, what are the controls, how is the landscape really functioning at a larger scale. And of course, probably don't need to tell you guys this, there's also financial challenges that are happening. This is the FY18 proposed budget. You notice agriculture, EPA, other agencies, energy, all of these budgets that these traditional federal funding agencies are all in line to potentially get substantial cutbacks. So we're going to be tighter research budgets probably overall. And so I'd say one of the big challenges, at least from my perspective, is that to advance our understanding of soil physical and hydrological processes, we need increased sensing capabilities. We need to read or to take measurements at higher spatial and temporal frequencies on decreasing budgets. In other words, we need to go from random kind of single point in time and space measurements to getting to more distributed high-frequency measurements on an ever-increasing dollar. So that, to me, is the challenge. And I think that these new generation of microprocessors and mini-computers, such as the Arduino and the Raspberry Pi, are a potential opportunity to start filling in that gap and start increasing our sensing capabilities. I'm going to focus here on the Arduino. That's what we've been working with the most. But certainly there are people that are using the Raspberry Pi, which is more of a mini-computer as well. And notice the price, under $40 for each of these units. So very affordable. If you add an SD card and some other connections, under $60, you could have a functioning Arduino unit ready to go. And so along with this, there's a plethora, hundreds of sensors that have been developed to work with the Arduino sensor. This is just a kit you can get. I think there's 40 sensors, all kinds of things, IR emission module, digital temp module, flame module. And I think you creative people in the room could probably start thinking of some ideas, ways we could start using this to get at some of the questions we have related to soil physics and hydrology. I'm going to take my time today just to talk about a few examples that we've been working on related to this field, soil moisture, measuring gas concentrations, and looking at turbidity. And you notice the prices of these sensors are all under $10. So again, limited research dollars, I think there's a lot of opportunity to start looking at the capabilities of some of these sensors. So for an example, soil moisture, this is the Spark Fun SCN13322. It's a $5 little hobbyist sensor. And then I'm going to compare it to a Decagon GS3 sensor. This is one of my favorite pieces of equipment we have. Rugged, easy to take out in the field, reliable, accurate, all those things. But you notice there's almost a 2-order of magnitude difference in price. So what are we getting for those that 50x increase in price, I guess, is one of the questions I have. And so I'll present just a little bit of data from a wetting experiment we've been doing, looking at infiltration and radial progression of a wetting front. For more details, I'll be talking about this experiment a little bit more later this afternoon. But for now, we're just going to focus on, you know, with the SparkFun sensor, we were able to put five of these, again, for $25, look at different distances in the radial progression of the wetting front versus one of the Decagon sensors. And so what do the data look like? So I guess the important thing is initially, these Arduino-based sensors give us some kind of reading, right? And it kind of makes sense. The closest sensor starts responding in terms of a change in output and change in millivolts. So on dry soil, there's a very low conductivity being read by that sensor. As it wets up, that conductivity being read by the sensor increases. We see progression as we go radial further out, like we'd expect. As that wetting front is moving outwards, we're seeing the sensor respond. In this case, in the SparkFun, very sharp responses, so almost a binary response, low conductivity or low millivolt readings to very high near the top of the range. This is 0 to 5,000 millivolt sensor. In contrast, our Decagon sensor is a more of a smooth curve. You might notice that one of the nice things, one of the things you're paying for with that $250, is that you're getting a water content value straight out. You're not getting a millivolt output, but you're getting something that is water content. Certainly there are huge differences in the technology in these sensors, whereas something like the Decagon sensor is going to be accurate, even without calibration, probably to a couple, 2 to 3%. If we look at the same radial distance as an example, we can kind of see that there are differences in what these sensors are doing. Again, this is just a millivolt here. The orange is that $5 SparkFun sensor, corresponding with the millivolts here on the secondary y-axis. This is time here on the x-axis since we started adding water. And again, we see this sharp binary response where it's either dry or wet. I think we'd have to do a lot of calibration to try to make that into anything resembling water content, and even then, maybe useful for some applications, probably not useful for a lot of the other applications that you all might have. First, the Decagon, more of a gradual increase, and of course that's giving us actual water content, which is good. And I will note, I think some of the reason for these data is probably the measurement volumes of these different sensors are going to change. So Dr. Horton's talking about thermal TDR. I imagine that's a different measurement volume than this, something that we're considering as we're trying to do some of this work on infiltration propagation. But I think these are all things. I think there are a lot of trade-offs when you're trying to do that. And certainly, in this case, the Decagon sensor is a lot more money, but it's also ready to go. It's ruggedized. You can repeatedly use it. There's no weatherproofing or anything like that. Another example is on CO2 sensors and looking at gas fluxes. So this is the, I believe it's called the MS2 sensor, about $3. We can step up an order of magnitude or so and get into an infrared sensor. Again, Arduino-based, this is about $70. We could step up another order of magnitude and get into a much nicer, better calibrated infrared gas analyzer sensor. And if we want to get crazy, we can go up another couple orders of magnitude and get something like a Licor 8100. Obviously, there's 4 orders of magnitude difference in prices, but they're almost not comparable, right? This is just a little cheapo sensor. This is something that's ruggedized, that's field portable, has batteries, has automated sampling hood, well calibrated, well protected, all those things. For purposes today, I'm going to focus on this mid-level $70 sensor, because this is something we started playing around with. Do these have potential to start looking at some CO2 movement in soils, effluxes, things like that? So we've been doing just some playing around. I have a student working with soil health kind of stuff, and we have been looking at CO2 burst test. Basically, the idea is you take some air-dry soil, you re-wet it, and you look at the CO2 emissions that come out after some period of time. And so again, these are just some very preliminary data, but we have a day when it's air dry, there maybe is a little bit of diurnal signal. We need to figure out if this is actual CO2 production or some temperature interference happening in the signal. But we wet it up and we see a big spike in the CO2 production, for several hours after that. And so I think there is possibility, obviously we need to do more calibration and method development, but I could certainly see that where you get to, you could analyze tens or even hundreds of different samples, each using, again, these relatively low-cost sensors versus trying to do it with something like a LIKOR, where a lot of labs don't have the resources to buy a piece of equipment like this. And you could probably run something like 20 setups with these $70 sensors for the same price just to get a flask sampling system for the LIKOR. So I think there are a lot of opportunities there, something we're going to continue to push forward on. And then I also want to talk about some of the work we've been doing trying to measure turbidity. This is a $10 sensor actually designed for washing machines, I guess, to look how dirty or clean your clothes are, the water coming off your clothes. And we're going to compare that to a $2,000. This is the Turner Cyclops 7 fluorometer. So again, we're talking a couple orders of magnitude difference in price. And so what do you get for that? We have here, this is our turbidity signal in NTU. On our first y-axis, we have the millivolt output from this $10 turbidity sensor. You might note that it goes from 212 millivolts when there's no turbidity to 224 millivolts when we have close to 1,000 NTU in there. So not a ton of signal, not much gain. This is a very noisy measurement versus our $2,000 sensor. We're going from 0 millivolts at 0 NTU up to about 1,200 millivolts. So the upshot is, besides having a much cleaner signal and more consistent signal, that the commercial Turner sensor is about 200 times more the cost, but you're talking at least 100 times the resolution. So I think these are some of the trade-offs that as these Arduino-based sensors start becoming more developed, that we have to think, is it worth the ability to run a lot of these for a low price versus a pretty poor signal and pretty poor data quality versus maybe only being able to afford a couple of these but getting really robust results. So, and hopefully sensors will continue to improve. I think there's a lot of people that are looking at kind of a compromise with these. So purchasing the more expensive, the more rugged, the better calibrated, more accurate sensors, and then pairing them with these low-cost Arduino-based data logging solutions. So I'll just put a shout-out to the Stroud Center and this Enviro DIY website. If you've never checked that out, it's worth it for sure. These people are way ahead of us on some of these solutions. They're actually packaging and reselling specific Arduino-based solutions for things like measuring turbidity. So there's a lot of great resources there. Help forum, all these things. I was trying to get some better data for this. This is a under $500 LiDAR that they're selling that interfaces with Arduino. Again, like everything, low cost, there's trade-offs with interfacing, with resolution. So you can certainly do three-dimensional scene recreations at roughly centimeter, maybe even sub-centimeter kind of resolutions, but there are some workarounds you have to do. But people are getting really, I think, pretty amazing results considering how inexpensive this sensor is compared to a terrestrial LiDAR that's tens of thousands of dollars. And certainly, I think of some applications like erosion monitoring. This is something that we're starting to look at. Can we actually detect changes in surface topography by repeatedly scanning a surface with sensors like this? And if so, you could start, again, talking about distributed sensing and look at larger scale processes. I think there's also opportunity in the lab to do things like measuring volumes of soil clods, which can allow you to do things like generate soil shrinkage curves, or coefficient of linear extensibility, or even determine bulk density of certain soil cores and certain soil clods. So again, I think there's a lot of opportunity here in some of these Arduino-based sensors. Of course, it's not all roses. Besides some of the accuracy and resolution limitations of these sensors, there are also some back-end challenges like coding requirements in either C or C++. I think a big one for certainly people like myself that work a lot in the field is there's no environmental protection built into these, and that's something we really struggle with, is trying to get them robust enough to be out unattended for months at a time. Power requirements. And I think a big one, and again, I go back to the Decagon GS3 versus those little spark plug sensors, is the Decagon's pretty much ready to go. You can certainly calibrate and improve your measurement, but if you don't calibrate, you're still going to get pretty high-quality data versus there's no way using these low-cost sensors you're going to get anything approaching that. So there's a lot more effort maybe on the back end or even the front end to get these usable for research applications. And so I'll wrap up by saying these Arduino-based sensors, lower cost, often by 1 to 3 orders of magnitude, and I think there's an opportunity to take these cost savings and translate that into higher frequency, either spatially or temporal, kind of measurements. And I think that's really an opportunity we have as a community going forward with these sensors. Data quality, of course, can suffer, and so something to be aware of, particularly with these hobbyist sensors that are a few dollars. I think there's a sweet spot where we have Arduino-based data logging interfaced with some of these more rugged, accurate sensors. But of course, there are also just some technical challenges, and that's where Brandon's been really helpful, to be able to interface with these sensors. Can we do this? And he actually doing the nuts and bolts. So I will wrap up there and take any questions, and I'm happy if you guys are interested. I'm always interested in collaborations or discussing ideas, anything like that. So thank you.
We have time for some questions.
So two major questions. One is that beyond this water content and the CO2 content and this turbidity, what are soil properties can you measure from the local process? And also, another question is that since with this low cost process, we can put more in the field. So what's the relative density of the sensors from the water?
So I guess the first question is, what other soil property related sensors are there? I think that there are a lot of opportunities. I mean, these are the ones we've been focusing on. But again, there's literally hundreds of sensors that people are developing. So I think your imagination's the limit as far as how can we use. I mean, can we use an infrared detector and measure something about soil property? I don't know. But I think certainly there are a lot of opportunities there. Second question was density of sensors. I think that's really going to be driven by your research question and your application, right? So it's going to depend, and also your budget, right? I think more sensors would be ideal in a lot of cases, but we have to be practical with experimental design, with data management. On the back end, if you're generating all this data, you have to have somebody that's proficient enough to process these data and make sense of them too. So there's a little gap there. Yeah, thanks. Tyson. Yeah, so the question is on retrieving of data and wireless transmission. So certainly, I mean, the Arduinos are almost infinitely flexible from what I understand. So you can buy cell phone modems or cell phone antennas. You can do radio transmitters. And certainly, like people down at the Duke School of the Environment, they have a research group that's way ahead of us on some of these more surface water-based applications. But they certainly are doing wireless telemetry, things like that. And yeah, I mean, your price is going to go up, so you're not talking $50. Maybe you're talking $100, $150 to get all that going. But still, probably relatively inexpensive compared to some others, and giving you the opportunity to maybe get 10x sensors out there or something like that.
I'll ask a question.
Sure.
I get to do that every once in a while. These are all kind of contact sensors. You have some visual sensors. Are you aware of any? You're seeing lots of sensors being developed. Do you see anything in the microwave bands, into the near infrared, shortwave infrareds?
Yes, the questions, I guess they could probably hear. I think there is some stuff. I don't do a lot of remote kind of stuff, so haven't been researching as much. I imagine, I'm almost positive there is infrared products. So for an example, we've been looking at, you can do greenhouse gas analyzers, and there is like surface emitting cavity lasers, things like that, that will interface with the Arduinos. You just start getting, your prices start getting really high once you get to certain wavelengths and things like that. Yeah.
I will comment, we actually started to try and do bulk density measurements with a stereographic camera, and one of the signals, and this will translate to some of the other instruments that are out there, it was a reflection signal, really. So it was the texture of the surface that was problematic. we needed to bring out basically big lights to really illuminate the surface enough to so the camera, the cheap camera, could see the texture. So if you start to play around with these things, it's really because of this resolution that is, it's really dulled. So you might think you're not getting a signal, but it's because there's not enough input sometimes, so you're not getting the reflection. One of our ways that we've played around with these cheap things, because we're one of those agencies that's being tight. So there are no other questions, we'll move on.
Thank you.
Thank you.